over from my anesthesia. "The shots are coming from the front," I mumble, trying to piece together the layout of serpentine from the small amount I've seen. "Can we get out the back?"
"Maybe, but the fence is electrified again."
We're kept prisoner by the thing that's supposed to keep people out.
"Can you turn it off?"
"There should be a control box somewhere, but..." I follow the direction of his gaze.
"It's probably in the front," I conclude dismally.
"What are we going to do?"
"You are going to stay here. I'm going to give those ally security bots a little help."
"But..." He flashes me a wry look.
"You're really arguing with me at a time like this?"
I draw breath to protest again, but he places his fingers on my lips.
"Hush. Stay."
And because I'm afraid I'll just get in his way. And maybe afraid in general, too. I stay, while he crouches, his gun held low and ready, and opens the door a crack. The shooting has stopped for now, but I can't hear any movement. Have the green shirts been defeated? Or the security bots disabled? If the green shirts are down, I want to be glad. But then I picture Rook in his uniform, sprawled and bleeding. I don't want anyone else to die, not even someone who wants to kill me. Lachlan is looking through the crack, listening intently. His body is still and tense, so much power held in check. He can only see a sliver of the next room, but I can tell he's using every sense to search for danger. After a long moment, though, I can see the tightness in his shoulders relax a bit. He turns toward me with a reassuring smile.
"Looks clear. But stay down."
I see his mistake in slow motion, though it takes place in a fraction of a second. He starts to push the door open, just an instant before he turns his smiling face away from me. Having lingered for a fatal instant. Is it my fault? Did I hold him with my gaze, releasing him too late? His guard is down, just for a moment. But it is the wrong moment. There's a shot. Close and deafeningly loud, and he staggers back. I see a fine spray of blood fly through the air, but I can't see the wound itself. He stumbles over a low stool and goes down, but he has the presence of mind to kick at the door as he falls. For a second, I hope. Then a black boot jams itself against the frame and the door bounces open again. The green shirt shoulders it open and points his much, much larger gun, a rifle, at Lachlan. I don't know if size matters in these things, but suddenly Lachlan's weapon looks like a toy. The green shirt doesn't see me, on the ground concealed by the operating table. Not yet.
"Get up," he barks at Lachlan.
Lachlan moans and rolls to his injured side. The green shirt kicks him, and it's all I can do not to cry out as Lachlan flinches and curls into a ball. I can't tell how much blood there is, how badly he's hurt. Is it worse than I thought? I think he was hit in the arm. Bad enough, but had it gone through his chest and exited his arm? Why isn't he fighting? He's just lying there now, not moving at all. I have to clamp my hand over my mouth to keep quiet. The green shirt screams at Lachlan to get up. Then, with sneering mouth and a growl of disgust, slings his rifle over his shoulder, takes a pair of handcuffs from his belt, and kneels beside the apparently unconscious Lachlan. "Do something, Lachlan," I silently beg. But he doesn't move. The green shirt clamps one handcuff on with a click that echoes in the room. Instantly, Lachlan comes alive, using his handcuffed arm, his uninjured one, to pull the green shirt on top of him. The green shirt, surprised, doesn't let go of the cuffs in time and sprawls. Lachlan lets out a groan as his wounded arm grinds into the ground. But he never stops fighting for an instant. He jerks the handcuffs out of the green shirt's grasp, flips the dangling end up so that it covers his knuckles, and punches the green shirt in the side of the head once, twice. But the green shirt shifts his weight and pins Lachlan's arm. Oh, great earth, there's so much blood. They're slipping in it as they struggle, their boots trying to get a grip on the slick floor as they grapple for position. Lachlan rolls the green shirt, and for a moment he's on top. Then the green shirt reaches up and tears at Lachlan's bullet wound with clawed fingers. Lachlan's face drains white, and I think he's going to pass out as the green shirt flips him, punches him in the face, and finally remembers his rifle. He's straddling Lachlan, a knee on either side keeping him pinned down. The green shirt takes his time now. He's that confident he's won. Easily, as if there's nothing at all urgent about the situation, he unslings his rifle and points it at Lachlan's face.
Second child, huh?
The green shirt uses the rifle muzzle to turn Lachlan's face so he can examine his eyes. The length of the weapon makes for an awkward angle, and the green shirt has to lean back to give him room to maneuver the weapon.
Do you know what they're going to do to you at the center?
He laughs, an ugly sound.
I'd be doing you a favor to shoot you now.
He presses the barrel to Lachlan's forehead, and I squeeze my eyes shut.
Lachlan, please do something!
Then my eyes fly open. Why am I waiting for Lachlan to act? The green shirt doesn't know I'm here. And right beside me, scattered when Lachlan hauled me to the ground as bullets started flying, is a scalpel. The blade is small, but deadly sharp. The green shirt is talking, loudly, gloating about the horrors that await Lachlan. What he's saying turns my stomach, but strengthens my resolution. Silently, I slide my feet under me, picking up the scalpel. It feels so slender in my grasp, too delicate for violence, but sharp enough for the threat of violence. The green shirt, so intent on his taunts, doesn't hear me as I creep up behind him and lay the edge of the scalpel against the side of his throat. I have my threat already. Drop your weapon, stand up slowly, or I'll open your veins. We'll tie him up. We'll escape. But the second my blade touches his throat, Lachlan bucks upward, and the scalpel slides in without resistance, as if the green shirt's skin is the finest silk. I pull backward, throw myself backward, but it's too late. A gush of blood sprays from his throat, pulsing in time to his heartbeat. As Lachlan grips a rifle and wrestles it away, the green shirt turns to me, with a look of surprise that breaks my heart. His eyes are big. He looks like he's about to say something. Then he slumps, almost gracefully. The blood pulses more slowly now from his slashed throat, pooling in a crimson lake around his body. Once more. And then both the green shirt and his flowing blood are still. Lachlan twists out from under him and stands unsteadily. I can't take my eyes off the dead green shirt. I did that. I ended a life. There isn't even blood on my hands. Lachlan is tugging at my arm.
Come on, we have to go.
I can't move.
We need to get out of here, get you someplace safe.
He drapes one of my arms over his shoulder and hauls me bodily toward the door. It should be the other way around. I should be supporting him. My legs don't seem to be working right. My feet drag. I can't, I begin, but I know I have to. The world begins to blur, the edges dissolving. Images like the ones I saw when I first regained consciousness threaten to barge into my sight or my mind. Figures in white coats. A monitor tracking someone's pulse and other vital signs. And wonderfully, in a vision I don't want to fight, a forest so real I can smell the damp earth. But I push it all back, and I see flame in the doorway, beckoning. Lachlan trains the rifle, liberated from the green shirt, on her, but she ignores it.
Thanks a whole bicking lot, she snaps. There I was, all set to upgrade Serpentine and relocate to a posh ring, and now, this.
She squints at me, at my eyes.
You shouldn't be standing. Not much choice, Lachlan says between clenched teeth. Where were you? Had to do an emergency override of my security bot's safety protocols. Thought a little judicious lethality might be called for here. My bots took care of the other one. Bick, bick, bick.
She rubs her forehead and paces.
Can I come up with any kind of story to cover this up? I can melt the bodies, of course. We get rid of lots of unwanted biobits here.
She keeps up a monologue as she strides, kinetic and intense. And I have the strangest feeling that despite all her cursing, this disaster is no more than a setback. She looks up, and there's the strangest little smile on her lips.
Do you kids have a place to go?
Lachlan nods.
And you? Think I've spent my life on the black market fringe without having a bolt hole or two? But you go on. I've got this covered.
She frowns down at the dead green shirt.
I think.
Then she shrugs and shakes her finger at Lachlan. Other troubles apparently forgotten. I'm realizing she may be slightly insane.
You get her someplace she can rest, for at least a day. She needs to be lying down so the pressure doesn't build up behind her eyes. Don't want to go pop, do we? And her neural network will be confused for a while. After all, you're linked, more or less, into the EcoPan now.
I blink, my eyes burning. So many implications.
I linked you with the identity your friend provided, instead of the one your mother had arranged. This boy has some connections.
She sounds impressed.
The identity your mother set up for you was compromised, I'm sure, since they were onto you. But this guy has the specs of another identity all set up.
She gives him a significant look.
Almost as if he's planned all this for a long, long time. Had to fiddle with the details. Gender, for example. But now EcoPan will officially recognize you as Yarrow. It'll take a while to gel, so there will be glitches for a few months. Some bots might not be able to get a read on you. But just to be safe, don't go anywhere you don't want the EcoPan knowing about.
I gasp. I can't go back to the underground. Where else can I go? I can't go home. I feel panic rising. I'm alone. Homeless. Adrift. Then, like the strange visions, but even clearer, I seem to see a flash of soft lilac before my eyes. Lark, I say decisively. Lark will take me in. She took me by her home on one of our nights out. I remember gazing at the small, comfortable residence. Most houses in Eden are connected, apartments built around a courtyard, or rows of upper-story apartments in commercial districts. But hers was like ours, detached from its neighbors. It was much smaller than ours, but as we stood outside, our shoulders touching, her lilac hair brushing my dark locks, I thought that it looked so warm and homey. Even at that late hour, there was a golden light in one of the windows, where, she said, her father was working far into the night. That is where Lachlan and I went when we fled Serpentine.
Are you sure you're able to stay?
He asks.
She'll let you, and keep you safe, and secret?
I'm positive, I say. Will you make sure Flint's order that we never see each other is rescinded?
Of course. I'm not completely happy about this.
What choice do we have? It's not like I have a lot of first-child friends.
Take this, just in case.
He tugs up his shirt and pulls his gun out of his waistband. I back away a step.
I can't,
I stammer.
My mother.
I know, he says, so gently, and he brushes a strand of hair from my cheek. But if the worst should happen, maybe this will keep you from sharing her fate. I squeeze my eyes closed, but reach for the gun. I don't know how to use it, I say as I heft its unfamiliar weight. It is small, but dense. He shows me how to slide the gun from its form-fitting holster. I'm so ignorant I think it's part of the gun. And where the trigger is.
Finger off the trigger until you're ready to fire, like this.
He demonstrates, cupping my hand, laying his forefinger over mine. I don't think I'll be able to use it, I protest, but he shakes his head.
You don't know what you're capable of. None of us do, until we're put to the test. But you've been tested a lot lately, and you've shone. Back in Serpentine when that green shirt was going to kill me, and you... Don't!
I say sharply. I can still smell the blood. I think I will forever. I don't want to think about what I did. I try to tell myself that it wasn't really my fault, that I would have only threatened the green shirt, that he only died because Lachlan shoved him upward. An accident. Forgivable. But I know in my heart that if he hadn't dropped the weapon, if I really thought he was going to ignore my threat and kill Lachlan, I would have plunged the knife into his throat deliberately. An act of will. The knowledge somehow frightens me. So does the way I don't make Lachlan take the gun back, but instead slip it under my own shirt, where it presses, cold and hard, against my belly. I have things inside of me I don't understand. Things I don't like. But they're things that are useful, that will keep me, and the people I care about, alive. When he's about to leave, I experience a moment of panic. Stay with me! He shakes his head. You can pass with Lark's parents. You've got the eyes for it. He winks his own second child eyes at me. I haven't even seen them yet, I say. There wasn't exactly time to look for a mirror when we were under fire. How are they? I expect him to say they look just fine. Maybe even to call them beautiful. Call me beautiful. Instead, he cocks his head and ponders far too long for comfort. They're... not you. I feel myself crumble. I don't want the stupid lenses. I just want to be me, safe and happy. I hang my head so he can't see my eyes. Lachlan takes me by the chin and makes me lift my head. Makes me look at him. Rowan is inside. You're not all this. He makes a sweeping gesture that encompasses my body from head to toe to head again. You're this. His palm comes to rest on my heart. I can feel it beating wildly against him. He pulls me closer, but only kisses me on the forehead. It's almost dawn. Get inside. I'll come back for you after dark. Without another word, he strides purposefully away, and in a moment, he's lost in the night's last darkness. I turn to knock, and as I do, I see a light in one of the rooms, softened by a curtain. It's not the same window I saw illuminated before, Lark's father's room. The curtain moves, and I see a glimpse of a face. Is that Lark? Did you see Lachlan touch me? Kiss me? I knock, and wait. And wait. When the door finally opens, it's not Lark, but a woman in her 40s, face a little puffy from sleep, her long fair hair tied in a hasty knot on the top of her head. Yes? She asks, more in curiosity than concern. I'm a friend of Lark's, I manage to choke out, even though I know I cleaned myself thoroughly in a public convenience on the way here. I feel an overwhelming desire to check for telltale smears of dark red dried blood. I force myself to look at her. To look pleasant. Normal. An odd hour for a social call. Her voice has that bit of twang common in the outer circles. I never noticed it in Lark. But of course, she's been going to school here. Are you early or late? What? I ask, confused. Up early to study for tomorrow's test, or out late from last night's party? I gulp. Early? Right, she drawls. Don't worry. None of the parents talk to me, and I'm sure yours are no different. I won't be blabbing to them. Was it a good party? I can't think of an answer, and she laughs, standing aside to motion me in. Get your story straight before you try it on your parents. When I'm inside, I feel a heavy pressure pushing against my eyes. I'm going to cry. I can't cry ever again. If I do, I'll never stop. It's just, I know I don't have a lot of experience. Maybe everyone's house feels like this. But Lark's place is somehow so obviously a home. There's a warmth, a smell of last night's cooking. There's a feel to it that I can't define. An aura of love, of safety, of family. It's not much, Lark's mom begins almost apologetically. It's perfect, I say, so ardently that she laughs. Let me see if Lark is awake.
She probably is, just like her namesake. I feel like she never slept for the first 3 years of her life. Up with the larks. Lark, she shouts. Your friend is here. I flinch at the sudden volume of her voice. Won't you wake her dad? No, he's a night manager at Water Reclamation. Water flows by sun and moon, he always says. She rolls her eyes, but she's grinning, thinking about her husband. I bet they love each other and get silly together. I bet they're completely and totally happy. I'd like to see them together. Lark comes out, looking fresh-faced and awake. The only sign of her ordeal is the fact that she's wearing long sleeves. I know they hide the bruises she received during her capture and interrogation. I forgot we were going to... study, I fill in. And then, before she can accidentally introduce me by my old name, I hold up my hand to her mom and say, I'm Yarrow. River, she replies. I can call you by your first name? I ask, surprised. I'd been tutored in politeness for the day I would finally be out in the world, and I wasn't expecting to be so informal. She gives a little shrug. Outer circle folk like us don't tend to be sticklers for the rules. There's a note of defiance in her voice. She wants to remind me that she and Lark aren't privileged inner circle people. It makes me wonder again why there are poor and rich. Why there are inner and outer circles. Why some have everything they could want and more. And some are literally starving. Eden isn't just supposed to be a shelter against the dead world. A place of survival and hibernation. It should be a utopia. There's no reason for inequality. But Lark drags me away to her room, and that conundrum slips away. The second the door closes behind us, she has her arms around me, her head resting between my neck and shoulder. I remember, she says. They said I wouldn't, and it was all a bit blurry for a while, but when it wore off, I remembered everything. She turns her head, pressing her lips to my throat. You were so brave. So strong. You saved my life. She pulls back, looks into my eyes, and gasps. Your eyes! They... She doesn't see anymore, but I can see disappointment in her face. Was I just something exotic to her? A strange-eyed second child. Even though she lived in the inner circle, she mingled with the poor, the bestial, the odd. Was I just another oddity on her list? A way for her to feel special? Now that I can pass as a first child, am I just like everyone else? Lark seems to sense my mood. I have just the thing to cheer you up. So, you lost a little color in your eyes. We'll just have to give you more color somewhere else. She sits me down on her bed and takes a contraption out of a small chest. I used to change my hair color all the time. Now I'm pretty set on this shade. She twirls a lock of her lilac hair. But sometimes I put a streak in for something different. She sits me down on the floor and perches on her bed, a knee on each side of my shoulders, my hair in easy reach. Now, do you want to pick for yourself, or do you trust me? I stiffen. Stop asking me that, I think. But once her hands start to caress my hair, I lean back into her and relax. She takes this as assent. Ultramarine, I think. With a bit of turquoise and jade. Nothing overwhelming, and mostly underneath. I want your natural dark hair to dominate. She strokes the machine along strands of my hair, combing it out with her fingers. I wish this could last forever. Me with my head on her lap, safe under her care. But nothing lasts. There, she says finally, and jumps up to bring me a hand mirror. At first, I hardly notice any difference. Shake your head, she instructs me. I do, and the colors suddenly emerge, vivid streaks in my dark hair. I love it, I say honestly, but my gaze keeps being drawn to my dull, flat, lifeless eyes. The hair can't make up for that. But I don't want to say that to Lark after she's been so kind.
She must be looking at my eyes too, though. Because as she looks at my reflection from over my shoulder, she asks, "How did you get them?" It's probably better if I don't get into it. The more you know, the more they'll think you're a dangerous liability. Are they going to kill me for having contact with you? No, Lachlan will take care of that. Lachlan. She repeats the name as if tasting something bitter. Where did he come from, anyway? How well do you know him? He saved my life. You don't know him as well as you know me, though. Do you? She sounds younger, smaller, weaker, not her usually vibrant and confident self. Do you trust him? I resent her questioning. He's not the one who let the center know about my mother, I snap before I can stop myself. He's done everything possible to keep me safe. Can you say the same? How dare you? She seethes, stepping back from me. I'm taking you into my home. I'm putting my father, my whole family, myself included, at terrible risk to help you. I made a mistake trusting other people, I know. And there are no words to tell you how sorry I am. But I meant well, and I'll never trust anyone again. No one except you. Her voice has grown steadily softer, her anger dissipating. She glides closer to me, but this time I'm the one who takes a step back. Trusting anyone is dangerous. You can trust Lachlan too, I say. Oh, really? What did you have to do to get those lenses then? Nothing. What do you mean? I saw you from my window. He looked like he owned you. You look like you didn't mind being owned. That's not the Rowan I know. Is that what this is about? Me and Lachlan? I don't want to fight. I'm tired. So incredibly tired. And I hardly even know why she's mad. If anyone should be mad, it's me. But I'm here, because I need her to help Lachlan and me save Ash. I'm not the Rowan, you know. I'm not Rowan anymore. I'm Yarrow, and I'm going to bed. Before she can say another word, I throw back the deep plum-colored covers of her bed and slide in. I pull them up resolutely, almost all the way over my face as I turn toward the wall. We'll meet Lachlan after dark, I mutter and close my eyes. Be ready to put your plan into action. Rowan, there's something I've been meaning to tell you. It just never seems to be the right time. What could she tell me? How sorry she is again? Exactly what she feels for me? I really don't want to hear it now. I pretend to fall asleep quickly. All the while, I don't hear Lark move. Finally, I do fall asleep. I know, because at some point I'm awakened by another body sliding under the sheets beside me. She doesn't embrace me. Doesn't touch me. But she is there, the warmth of her body filling the bed. But against my stomach, the gun is still cold as death. I sleep all day, and at night I take Lark to the location I told Lachlan we would meet him. An innocuous little takeout place, with enough traffic to make us completely inconspicuous. But when we arrive, there's no sign of Lachlan. As we wait, I look longingly at the takeout, kebabs redolent with salt and synthetic fat, because I haven't eaten in forever. I feel like at any moment will be too obvious, even here, standing for a long time without buying anything. It is apparent that Lark and I are waiting, impatient. I thought you said you trusted him. Lark snaps. I do, I assure her. Maybe. But the list of maybes is too long, and for the most part, too terrible to articulate. Maybe he was captured. Maybe Flint turned against him. Maybe, now that he knows that Flame can make convincing lenses, he's decided not to risk his life helping me save Ash. Maybe he'll convince her to help the second children. Maybe he'll even turn her over to Flint for his particularly unpleasant brand of convincing. We can't wait any longer, I say at last. So with great reluctance, I leave the rendezvous site and make my way to my house. I know the heart is just about pumping blood. An engine and nothing more. It's not the seat of emotions, the repository of love and hope and happiness. All the same, when I stand at the base of my courtyard wall, at the sheltered side where no one else can see, I look up at the walls that held me in all my life. The walls that held everything I knew and loved. I swear it is my heart that hurts. A pain that must be physical seems to stab me in the chest. Home. Without Mom and Ash inside, it's really nothing more than an empty shell. Still, it was my shell. Give me about 10 minutes, I tell Lark. Maybe 15. With luck, he's not home. He used to work late all the time, but now, I don't know. I'll let you in the front door. What if he is home? Lark asks. I don't know. I do, Lark says, and I'm surprised at the fury in her voice. If he's there, he needs to be punished for what he did to Ash. And to you. My father, who hated me, who betrayed his own son to the center, deserves to be punished. If Lachlan were here, so strong and capable, with so much violence lurking just beneath his usual joking exterior, he would willingly be the one to mete it out. But could Lark? Could I? I find myself hoping he'll be out. Not because I wouldn't relish the sight of Lark beating his face to a bloody pulp, but because I would. That frightens me. What am I turning into? Whether he's home or not, I can get in silently. I've spent a lifetime doing it. Then, after I let you in, we can get his credentials. With them, we'll be able to move anywhere inside the center. When my fingers curl around the first handhold, I feel that stab again. But I take a deep breath, which turns into a sigh, and start to climb. I can feel her eyes on me, but I don't dare look down. I'm barely holding on. Literally. The outside of the wall isn't as intimately ingrained on my memory, my fingertips, as the inside. But still, it is connected to some of the happiest moments of my life. The bittersweet ending to each clandestine night with Lark. All the more bittersweet because of what came of our friendship. Each touch of a new rock beneath my hand seems to spark a new memory. Lark showing me the stars from the rooftop. Lark's kiss. After tonight, I may never see her again. I'll be embedded in my mission, under my new identity. It's probably for the best. I can't look at her without thinking how her careless trust of the wrong person cost my mother her life, and ultimately condemned Ash to his death sentence. I know she didn't mean to, that it tears at her almost as much as it does me. Still, it might be best that we're going our separate ways. At least I'll still have Lachlan, helping me with my mission. Don't cry, I tell myself firmly as I climb down on the inside. All your tears are already shed. Now is the time for strength. My feet hit the moss inside the courtyard, and in an instant, I feel caged again. What if I'd never ventured outside of my familial prison? What would have been different? Would I have found a way to grasp at happiness? I managed to walk across the springy moss Mom tended to so lovingly without a single salty drop falling. Sure, my eyes are already heavy and wet, but that's just from the surgery. I let myself into the house. Everything is just the same, as if I'd never left. I have expected new locks, a regiment of green shirts stationed inside. At the very least, some sign of chaos. Broken knickknacks, an overturned chair. An unwashed dish left on the countertop in a moment of grief, or even distraction. Dust. But everything is perfect, just as if Mom is still there, ruling so sweetly over the family. I move through the quiet house, touching things, smelling Mom's side of the sofa, the place where her ponytail would rest when she flopped down after a long day at work. And I listen for the sound of my father. The house is silent. Cautiously, I creep toward my parents' bedroom. There, finally, is a small sign of disruption. The bedclothes are disheveled. Did he forget to make the bed, plagued by guilt? Did he simply not know how to perform a task Mom usually did? Or has he been unable to sleep in their bed since her death? I don't know, but at least something is different. If it wasn't made mostly of stone, I'd like to burn this whole house to the ground. The bedroom is empty, and so is the rest of the house. My father is out, maybe at work, maybe scheming to destroy someone else. Maybe, if he has an ounce of goodness in him, getting drunk and nerving himself up to jump off the tallest building in Eden. Bitterness consumes me, a hate that hurts, but I can't fight. I let Lark in. "We're alone," I say, and lead her to my father's office. We're looking for his security pass. I can only hope that he's not staying late at work, but out somewhere else. If he's at work, he'll have his ID on him. I have no idea what we'll do then. We might also need other security codes to pass center security. Lachlan would know exactly what we need. I'm not so sure myself. Where is Lachlan? I start to go through various documents in my father's office. "Can't you find it?" Lark asks, glancing anxiously in the direction of the front door, listening for sounds of approach. I'm beginning to panic that I won't be able to find it. What if he still has it on him? Do we wait for him to come home and take it from him by force? Finally, I find it, shoved haphazardly in a drawer as if he just wanted to get rid of it in a hurry. "I've got it!" I cry excitedly, holding it up. "I think this is all we need. My father doesn't seem to be very security conscious." "Then let's go," she says urgently. "He could be back any minute." I want to see if there's anything else useful here. I don't know what else we might need once we're inside the center. I also wonder if there might be anything incriminating in here, leverage to use against my father. Or maybe something that would be useful to the underground. I scan each page as quickly as I can. "Come on," Lark says anxiously, bouncing on the balls of her feet. But it's too late. I hear the doorknob turn. My father's heavy tread, stumbling. I reach under my shirt and touch the gun pressed against my navel. "No," I say, very softly, reminding myself that I'm a good person. Better than my father, at any rate. If he doesn't come in here, if he goes straight to bed, we can slip out the front door. He's talking. Did he bring someone home with him? I step closer to the closed over, but not completely closed, door, and listen. "It's not my fault." His voice is wheedling, pathetic. I've never heard him sound like that before. "It wasn't supposed to happen like that." I wait, but there's no answer. He's alone, talking to himself. "In here, quick," I say to Lark, as I pull the trick bookcase out on its silent and smooth pneumatic hinges. She steps into the secret alcove behind, and I close the door over. Not all the way, though. Once closed, it can only be opened from the outside. And if anything should go wrong, I don't want Lark trapped in there. I creep out. I'm being foolish, I know, but I feel like I need to see my father. I haven't yet decided if he needs to see me. I was supposed to be the good example. The man who puts Eden before family. The incorruptible leader who isn't tainted by his family's transgressions. I hear a meaty thud. And another. When I poke my head carefully around the corner and look into the kitchen, I see him striking the sides of his head with his hands. "Oh, Ash, what have I done? They promised me!" He slams his head down on the counter, and when he stands, swaying unsteadily, there's a bloody gash in his forehead. "Good," I think. "I'm getting used to blood now." Another part hurts for him. Whatever else he is, he loved Mom. And Ash, I thought. I step into the room. "What did they promise you?" He whirls, and the stench of alcohol hits me hard. For a second, he looks overjoyed to see me. He starts toward me, arms starting to open. At the same time I stiffen. And he seems to remember how he has felt about me all my life. He comes to an abrupt halt.
You're alive.
So are you, I counter, my voice low and steady. Remarkably steady, given my inner turmoil.
But you shouldn't be. You gave up Ash to save yourself.
No, he stammers, swaying where he stands.
It wasn't like that. The center needs stability, or the circles will not hold. That's what they told me. They said they needed an example. I thought they meant me. A good example.
He babbles on, slurring and incoherent at times, telling me how the Chancellor told him removing him from the Vice-Chancellorship would be disastrous at this point. Everyone knew that he'd been tapped to fill the position. And if they changed their minds now, if he was brought down by a terrible scandal, it would make the center look weak. So they decided to make my father look like the hero of Eden. The self-sacrificing kind of leader, who would turn in his own beloved family for the sake of right and law and the preservation of our precious sanctuary.
They've painted your mom as some kind of activist, he spits the word. No one knows you're our own daughter. They think your mother was just part of an underground network of people helping second children. Your mom. And Ash. They're telling everyone I turned her in. They.
He falls to his knees, overcome. Maybe begging for my forgiveness.
They're calling me a hero.
He chokes out between sobs.
A real hero of Eden. A second Aaron Albaz.
How ironic. How fitting. That Dad should be compared to that monster.
And Ash?
I ask coldly.
They said they needed an example. Oh, great Earth, I didn't ask questions. I just signed whatever they put in front of me. I was so afraid. I could be executed for keeping you safe.
Instead, your own son is going to be killed. While you assume the second highest position in Eden. Always protect yourself, right? Almost as if it had a will of its own. My hand creeps toward my stomach, my fingers twitching at the hem of my shirt. I can feel the irregular bulk of the gun beneath my clothes. Dad can't see it, though. Not yet.
It wasn't supposed to be that way,
he moans, rocking back and forth on his knees.
He was supposed to be kept in prison until everything died down, set free somewhere far from the center.
Oh. So you just wanted to ruin his life? Shuffle him away to the outer circles where he could starve? A step above execution, barely. I shake my head slowly. You've been a rotten father. Even to the child you actually love. You burned a hole in him while he was still in the womb. And now you're finishing the job of killing him. He looks up at me, aghast.
You knew?
Recently. Mom told me, before the green shirts gunned her down. I sound so hard and cold. My voice doesn't seem like my own anymore. My father winces, cringes, seems to shrink inside himself.
What can I do?
He asks, holding up his hands helplessly. But his hands are empty, powerless. There's nothing he can do to make this right, except... I pull the gun out from under my shirt and point it at his head. I expect him to shout, to weep harder, to beg, to lunge at me. But he just kneels at my feet, looking sadly up at me, accepting. If he had begged, I would have shot him. But this broken man, quietly waiting for the end. I'm so focused on my father that Lark, swooping in behind him, is a blur of movement. She has a heavy lamp in her hand, the one Mom never liked, but which we kept because it had been her own mother's. With a grunt of effort, Lark hits my dad hard in the side of the head. He crumples to the tile floor, unconscious.
Why didn't you let me shoot him?
I ask Lark.
She doesn't know that I had already controlled myself. You need to have a clear head tonight, she says with a light-hearted wink that reminds me of Lachlan. Do you think you'd be calm and collected if you just executed your own father? She's right, of course. She understands me. Let's go, I say, and lead her from my house. Lachlan is outside, lurking in a cluster of faux palm trees planted near our doorway. Where were you? I demand at the same time he says. Why didn't you wait for me? Then we both notice I still have the gun in my hand. I realize I don't even know if it's lethal, or will only stun. With my jaw clenched tightly, I tuck it back into my waistband. Do I even want to know what happened in there? Lachlan asks. I shake my head. Do I even want to know why you didn't show? I ask him. He flashes me a crooked grin. Probably not. Just a few simple acts of thievery. Me too, I say guardedly. He looks down where the gun is now concealed against my belly. Any other crimes? No, I say. Then after a pause I add, if I'd even consider shooting him a crime. Don't get hard, Rowan, he whispers to me, touching my arm lightly with his fingertips. If the world calls for someone hard, call on me. I'm already broken. No, I say when I look at the route Lark has arranged for us to break into the center. I have a gut-wrenching shock of revulsion. Not a chance. Not even for Ash will I go into that. I know you don't mean that, Lark says. My head and heart don't, but my nose and gut do. But I press my lips together. I wish I could do something not too obvious to stop up my nose. And stand stoically looking over the huge underground reservoir that seems to contain the human waste of all of Eden. We're underground, having traveled by conduits where Eden's water flows. Up until now, it was what Lark called gray water, liquid that had been used for showering, washing dishes, brushing teeth. It wasn't exactly clean, but it wasn't disgusting. This, however, is everything that was shunted from the inner circle toilets. This is part of being human, Lark says philosophically. Especially when lots of humans live together. Rich or poor, bodily waste all smells the same. Lachlan looks just as calm at the prospect as I try to pretend to be. But he's quick to voice an objection in his usual sardonic tone. If all goes well, we hope to not meet anyone the entire time we're inside, he tells Lark. But in my experience, things rarely go as well as they should. Failing that, we hope, with her father's ID, to be able to pass as employees or messengers to a cursory glance. He sniffs deeply. Do you really think anyone will buy our cover story for a second if we lurk around the most important, most secure place in Eden, stinking like sewer and covered in feces? Lark flashes him a disdainful look. You really don't have a high opinion of my covert skills, do you? Oh, that's right. We edgers are just dabbling, dilettante do-gooders. She presses at a section of the wall, and a door pops open. Inside are several sterile full-body contamination suits, along with disposable full-face masks. I look at them dubiously. They don't seem watertight. Don't worry. They shrink to fit, and then make a biofuse once you put them on. There's a built-in rebreather, with enough for at least an hour. Nothing is breaching that. At least nothing floating in there. When you get to the other side, you can strip them off and shove them somewhere.
And if we have to leave this way, too, instead of the main entrance? Lachlan asks.
There will be more on the other side. They're everywhere. Every time something goes wrong or gets clogged, someone has to dive underneath the sludge. It's actually a very efficient system, overall. Just not one that takes human dignity into consideration. My father used to have this job before he got promoted. Now he just decides when someone else has to do this job.
And we'll come up right underneath the center.
Right inside, she says,
there will be an access hatch. My dad has taken me all over Eden Underground. I can travel anywhere unseen, if I don't mind getting a little dirty. Most of the tunnels aren't bad, though.
I wish we knew about this, Lachlan says.
We have our own system, passageways left over from when the underground was first built. But we know nothing about the water and sewage system. When this is all over, would you be willing to share maps with us?
Of course, assuming we live.
I try to ignore that comment. You're not coming, I tell her.
But
no, both Lachlan and I say.
You've done your part, I go on. You've risked yourself enough for us.
No, not enough. Never enough.
She's looking intensely at me. Ash is my friend, she turns to Lachlan.
And Rowan is more than that.
Lachlan raises his eyebrows at that comment, but luckily doesn't look at me. Despite everything else that's going on, I know I'm blushing at that statement.
Rowan has the right to go. Ash is her brother. But you're just one more person to give us away, to make a mistake, to get hurt, to have to leave behind.
He pauses to let that sink in. To him, she's the expendable one. If he has the chance to rescue anyone, it will be me, not her. She'll be on her own. She sighs, but knows she's beat. Instead, she busies herself helping us put on the underwater hazmat suits. I look at the lake of foul sludge in distaste. Are you sure we can actually swim in that? She chuckles.
It's just on the surface. About 4 feet of it floating in a layer on top of the water. Once you clear it, you just have to swim.
I suddenly see another obstacle I somehow never thought of. I've never been in water deeper or bigger than a bathtub. I can't swim.
Luckily, you don't have to, Lachlan says. At least not really. It only counts as swimming if you have to get to the surface to breathe. All you have to do here is not panic. You can do that, right?
I remember the nanosand crushing me, filling my nose, my mouth, creeping toward my lungs. Will swimming be like that? Maybe not, but drowning will.
But,
right, I say, of course. I hope I don't let Lachlan down. I hope we both don't let Ash down.
If I don't make it, will you go on and still try to save him?
I ask Lachlan. I bite my lower lip, tense. If I'm gone, with my lens implants, my special undercover assignment, what motivation will he have for saving Ash? I keep misjudging him. But what do I know of people anyway?
I won't let you not make it, he says with a light-hearted wink. But if you don't, I'll get your brother for you. Or die trying.
He makes it sound preposterously melodramatic, but I know he means it. Lark helps us into the suits, and even before I plunge into the sludge, I feel like I'm suffocating. The suit is made of some kind of biofilm that fuses seamlessly wherever the coated edges meet, sealing me inside what feels like a death chamber. When the mask goes on, I almost panic. The second my desperate breathing starts to fog up the full face mask, Lachlan catches one of my hands, Lark the other, like they're in a race to be the first to soothe me. Their competition distracts me enough to make me stop worrying about the suit killing me. I stop hyperventilating and sigh in exasperation. That works, and I find I can breathe tolerably well even inside my latest prison.
Ready? Lachlan asks.
No, I say.
Not at all.
He laughs, thinking I'm joking, and dives in head first, certain I'll follow him. That's what happens when you get a reputation for bravery, I guess.
Is that how courageous people persevere?
They do one brave thing, and have to live up to their reputation ever after. It would be so much easier to be a coward, but harder to live with myself. Alone, I turn to Lark. Something has been nagging me in the back of my mind.
You told me before you had something to tell me,
What is it?
My voice is muffled beneath the mask.
Two lines crease, then quickly smooth between her golden eyebrows.
It's nothing.
It can wait.
She flashes a brilliant smile and gives me a quick hug.
I'll tell you later. Promise.
Don't worry. I'll be looking after you too.
What do you mean?
She hesitates a moment with a secret little smile.
Why, waiting here, of course. To help you if you have to escape this way.
She touches my face, but it is remote through the hazmat mask. Lachlan surfaces in the filth, beckoning me urgently. Awkwardly, I plunge in after Lachlan. Terrible blackness that weighs me down, clings to me with its foulness, so that even though I know none of it's touching my skin, I feel deeply contaminated. Then, wonderful lightness. I'm cleaned, pure, in a crystal weightless world. The wastewater pool is huge, but lights set along the walls beam inward, making a star pattern of silvery illumination. Is this swimming? This cool, clear hovering that seems to strip all my cares away. I wish I could shrug out of the protective suit and feel the water on my skin. Then I try to move, and I realize that this is an alien world. Only technology is keeping me alive down here. I have an abstract idea of how to swim, of course. I've seen vids of people swimming. I move my arms in a certain way. I kick my legs. In my head, it makes sense. My first arm stroke sends me spinning sideways. I try to kick and somersault through the water. Lachlan grabs me and steadies me with one hand on the small of my back, one under my arm. I hold my breath and start to rise toward the ceiling of sludge. Lachlan pushes me down and mimes a proper swimming technique. I try, but end up in a modified crawl, as if I'm scaling a weird kind of malleable wall. But it moves me along, however awkwardly, and we head toward a tunnel. Once inside, I can pull myself along the walls. It's an animalistic kind of four-legged gallop, and would be fun if it wasn't for a destination. The rebreather unit in the mask makes a gentle hum as I breathe. We've been underwater for a while now. What if the equipment fails? Even assuming I could swim, or manage to not suck water up my nose, there's no route to fresh air. Finally, the tunnel opens up. And then, up. There's a current here now, with water flowing from all the center's uses down to the main city system. Luckily, the human waste goes through a separate pipe that just opens into the place we entered, so this is just runoff from sinks and such. During the day, Lark told us, the outward flow would be so strong that we couldn't swim against it. At night, though, with a skeleton staff manning the center, there's little water use, and only a gentle flow for us to swim through. That's a good sign. Fewer people for us to contend with. The tunnel narrows, branches, but as instructed, we stick to the main one. It finally opens up in a bulb-shaped chamber with a multitude of pipes feeding into it. In the center of that is a hatch. We've been under a long time. The air I'm breathing seems stale, and I'm starting to feel a strange hypnotic sensation, like my focus is expanding and contracting. Lights dance in front of my eyes. I see the water flowing in front of me, but it's different water. That makes no sense. There is the slightly clouded water I'm swimming in, if this strange flailing crawl of mine can be considered swimming. And beyond that, no, on top of that, is another water, more clear, with a different, circular flow. The edges of my vision dim, and all I see is that other water. A light shines through it at an angle, making shadows of the things moving through it. Shapes the size of my palm, shadows without color or solid form, moving in a unison, so precise it must be mechanical. I squint at this vision, confused, trying to see it all more clearly. Is it here? Am I losing my mind?
I pull at Lachlan's arm, distracting him from trying to open the hatch. I point at the shapes, but he doesn't understand. He thinks I'm